The Jewish community has managed to survive and thrive despite thousands of years of persecution and oppression, pogroms and exiles. What is it that has kept us together without sovereignty, without a land, without an army? Mark Twain famously wrote the following passage in 1899. The Egyptian, the Babylonian, and the Persian rose filled the planet with sound and splendor, then faded to dream stuff and passed away. The Greek and the Roman followed and made a vast noise, and they are gone. Other peoples have sprung up and held their torch high for a time, but it burnt out, and they sit in twilight now or have vanished. The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakening of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert and aggressive mind. All things are mortal but the Jew. All of their forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality? What is the secret of our immortality? Maybe it's a miracle of Jewish survival, or maybe it's something about the unique way that we have viewed our texts. Moshe Habertal wrote a book, a very important book, entitled People of the Book, Canon, Meaning, and Authority. And in this work, he creates a framework for how canonization of Jewish texts is the key that maintains Jewish identity and Jewish belonging and Jewish vibrancy. In this work, and Moshe Halbertan, who studied at Gush, Yeshivat Har Etzion, he's also an academic, and he asserts that canonization is the source of power, and it creates boundaries for a text-centered community. Question is, what is canonization? So when a text is canonized, it's generally considered to be the most important and most influential. And there are two different types of canons. There's an open canon and a sealed canon. An open canon is an important work, but you can continue to add and revise this work. A sealed canon is complete, and it cannot be revised or expanded. And Moshe Habertal speaks of three sealed Jewish canonized texts, the Tanakh, the Mishnah, and the Talmud. Now, what happens when a canon is sealed? When a canon is sealed, it has authoritative status. Tanakh was sealed in the time of the Second Beis Hamikdash, and now that means that all study surrounds this text, and all future commentaries are based on this text. As soon as a text is canonized, or as soon as the Tanakh was canonized, and it was closed, it was sealed, the power shifts from the Navi to the Chacham, from the writer of the text to the interpreter of the text. The Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, states, Chacham Adif Minavi, a sage is greater than the Navi. Because the sage, the Chacham, interprets the text. Now, what's the advantage and disadvantage of a sealed canon? So the advantage of a sealed canon is there is stability and authority. If a canon is sealed, it's closed, no adding, no revising, so then this work has a stable foundation for belief, practice, or interpretation. It creates a clear boundary for what is considered authoritative or sacred or holy. It helps also unify communities by giving everyone the same core text for reference. And it preserves tradition. It preserves the original text from redefinition or manipulation. So there's a clear advantage in having a sealed canon. This is what our religion is based on. This was the Tanakh. The disadvantage of a sealed canon is rigidity. It could be resistant to new insights, new discoveries, or evolving human experience. It might feel outdated or disconnected from current realities. It can limit inclusion of valuable perspectives that emerge later, and it can marginalize minority voices or later developments. So it's the advantage is stability and authority, uniformity, preserving tradition. The disadvantage is that it's rigid and it can become viewed as outdated in subsequent generations. So the solution is interpretation. The solution for the sealed canon of Tanakh is that interpretation is flexible and opens up many possible interpretations. The text is fixed, but it allows for many interpretations. Flexible interpretation keeps tradition current and connected to current realities. There are many different methods of interpretation, different Midos, Shatar, Nidrashes, Baham, many different exegetical principles, Pshat, Remesh, Drush, and Sod. The sealing of the canon creates authority, but it provides a vehicle for rabbinic innovation and creativity, leading to vibrancy. There is this concept that Moshe Halbertal speaks about regarding canon and the principle of charity. And what he means by this is that if the source of the Jewish text is divine, we believe either HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated it, or is based on Nevuah or Ruach HaKodesh when it comes to the Ksuvim, then we must interpret the text according to the best possible light. Again, this is referred to by Willard Quine as the principle of charity. When it comes to non-divine texts, there's no commitment to interpret it in the best possible light. You read a text, and you say, this is what I think it means. However, when it comes to a Torah text, text of Tanakh, we believe that since it was divinely inspired, it was divine or divinely inspired, then we have to interpret it according to some external standard, which is based on the fact that it was given by God. And just as an example, in Sefer Koheles, so there's a pasuk, this is one of many examples, the pasuk says, Ein tov ba'adam sheyochal ushtei. There's nothing better for a person that he should eat or drink. Let's think about this. We are a spiritual religion, and so is that really the best in our lives to eat and drink? The best is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to do mitzvos. So therefore, in Koheles Rabbah, he cites the opinion of Tanchuma, says in the name of Rav Nachman, Braid Rav Shmuel, Bar Nachman, Rav Benachamam, and some say it was Rav Yirmiya, Rav Mesha, in the name of Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Kol Achila Ushtia Shenemar B'Megillah. Anytime it says in Koheles, eating and drinking, B'Megillah Azos, it's referring to, I'm sorry, Kol Achila Ushtia Shenemar B'Megillah Azos, anytime in the Megillah's Koheles it mentions eating and drinking, it's referring to Torah Uva Masim Tovim Kosim Adaber. It's referring to Torah and Masim Tovim. I read the text, eating nothing better than food or drink, than eating and drinking. That's obviously what it means. But no, since we believe that the text is divine, we will interpret the text according to the best possible light. And therefore, based on the idea that Torah Masim Tovim is the best, is obviously we want Torah Masim Tovim. So therefore, we are going to reinterpret this text. We're going to reinterpret this text according to not the simple understanding, but based on an external standard. We are going to interpret it as Torah and Masim Tovim. And this also Shir HaShirim, how it's viewed as an allegory. It's a love song. It's a love song between a male and a female lover, but it's interpreted as understood by many midrashim as the love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. The Rambam, the Morei Nevuchim, also writes that Kadosh Baruch Hu is not physical. Right, so in the Morei Nevuchim, Chelek Beis, Perek Chav Hei, that God is not physical, and so therefore he interprets the Torah based on this external standard that God is not corporeal. It doesn't do physical things, even though it says it refers to Hashem in Vayomer Vayas. Hashem said, Hashem did. Obviously, this is understood b'derech mashal, by way of parable, because there's some external standard in interpreting the text in the best possible light. So this is this idea of the sealed canon of Tanakh with flexible interpretation. How does a canonized text, if it comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, divinely inspired, how does it deal with controversy? If it's all divine, why is there machlokes? Why is there debate? So how do we understand the debates in the Mishnah and the Gemara? So there, Moshe Howard tells, he cites three different approaches to controversy, what he calls the retrieval model. It's based on the Gaonim. You can find in the Sefer Kabbalah in its introduction. He explains that controversy is due to forgetfulness. That really there's one Misoresh, Kadosh Baruch Hu said one thing at Sinai, gave it over to Moshe, to Yeshua. One way to interpret the Torah based on different interpretive principles. Torah Shebaal Peh, there's one method that was handed from Rebbe to Talmud, Rebbe to Talmud. And then our job, the job of the Tanaim and the Amoraim, and the job of Chazal is to retrieve that which was given over at Sinai. There's one truth. Second approach is what he calls the cumulative model based on the Rambam. And there the Rambam writes in his introduction to the Yad HaChazakah, says that the principles of interpretation were revealed at Sinai, but not all of Torah Shebaal Peh, but controversy is based on different application of these principles. And why he calls it a cumulative model, because each generation adds substantive rules derived by their own reasoning to the given revealed body of knowledge. In other words, what Hashem gave to Moshe at Sinai, he told him a lot of information, a lot of laws, and he also told Moshe different principles of interpretation, which were used by subsequent generations to create new laws, or to determine to add new laws based on their levels of interpretation. And there's a third model, which he calls, based on the Ritva and other Rishonim, called the constitutive model. The Ritva in Erevin Daf Yigimel Beis says that at Sinai, Hashem told Moshe 49 ways to make something mutter and 49 ways to make something aser. And he said that the Chacham of the generation would decide. Meaning, there are, according to the constitutive model, there are many legitimate interpretations of the law that were revealed at Sinai. And the court defines what those laws should be. They have the right to constitute the true meaning of the text. That's called the constitutive model. That's how he deals with three approaches to controversy. The key, though, that to having a vibrant religion, that's lasted for thousands of years based on these old texts, is not simply the sealed canon together with flexible interpretation, but it has to do with the fact that the canonization of these texts are both normative and formative. The uniqueness of Jewish canonical texts is that they are both formative and normative. What are these terms? What is normative and formative? Normative means it's the basis of halacha or legal decisions. In other words, our texts are the source of how we're supposed to act for daily living, but they're also formative, meaning they're meant to be studied and interpreted for daily Jewish living. Jewish textual study was a religious obligation of every Jewish male. There's a daily obligation based on V'gisa Bo Yom V'Laila. There's statements in the Mishnah, Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. Everyone is expected to learn, not just rabbis and scholars. The Gemara in Baba Basra, Chaf Aleph Amid Aleph, states that Yeshua ben Gamla made a ruling, and he established that there should be teachers of young children in every community, in every town. When they're six or seven, they learn. The goal is that everyone is expected to learn these canonized texts. And this is a sharp contrast to the Christians, where Bible study was not expected of the average believer. Texts were in Latin, and most lay people were illiterate, and they relied on the clergy. The church discouraged lay interpretation to avoid the possibility of heresy. But Jewish study was intellectual, legal, and interpretive. It was for inspiration and morality, and also for building a legal, ethical, and philosophical system. Jewish study, Jewish tradition encouraged questioning, commentary, and layers of interpretation. Therefore, having a sealed canon, plus the expectation that the canon is both formative and normative, are what continue to make Jewish texts vibrant and meaningful with each and every generation. There's also besides the canonized texts of the Bible, Tanakh, Mishnah, and Gemara, there are also closed codes, the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam, and the Shulchan Aruch. The Mishnah and the Talmud are flexible codes. There's no consensus in the Mishnah, as very often as to what the halacha is. Very often there's debates. Mishnah says, one rabbi says this, and another rabbi says this. The Talmud is even more flexible. The Talmud is really a springboard to discuss many issues. But the canonization of the Mishnah and the Talmud means that an Amora doesn't argue on a Tana, and a Rishon doesn't argue on an Amora. the Mishnah Torah by the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, sort of moved from controversy that we find in Mishnah and the Talmud to clear legal positions that expanded the power of the author of the Rambam by the Mishnah Torah, of the Rav Yosef Karo with the Shulchan Aruch. We have to follow the author's own final judgment, and there was a lot of criticism associated with these closed codes. But what Halbertal describes is the methodology of a text-centered community. In short, the methodology of a text-centered community is that you have a scholar who rises to become an authority figure through the interpretation of the text. The Torah becomes an object of ongoing reflection and the place of religious presence and experience. And the boundaries of the community are shaped in relation to the loyalty to a shared canon. The Jewish community is structured not around theological concepts or religious commitments. I mean, they are, but fundamentally, it's around a shared canon. And that shared canon, that sealed shared canon with the flexible interpretation as a source of both formative and normative use, that is what kept the Jewish community together. In fact, in the modern era, starting from the end of the 18th century and certainly 19th and 20th, 21st century, there's a change in the nature of the community beginning at the end of the 18th century and certainly in the 19th century. And there are questions of how to ensure Jewish continuity, how to maintain Jewish identity and a sense of Jewish belonging. So there was a change in the nature of the community. There was an emergence of a modern national identity among Jews that was no longer based on text-centeredness, but on other features of commonality, both normative and formative. Just as an example, the Haskalah, the Jewish Enlightenment. The Haskalah movement was an 18th and 19th century intellectual movement that sought to modernize Jewish life through secular education, cultural integration, and religious reform, while preserving Jewish identity. And the question is, what makes me uniquely Jewish if not for the sacred Jewish texts? But they tried other methods, not through the classic texts, certainly not through the Mishnah, and certainly not through the Talmud. Zionism was also created a sense of national identity, which also was not necessarily based on a feeling of a shared canon. The Zionist followers preferred studying the Bible over the Talmud. They viewed the Talmud as a function of the diaspora, and the stories, I'm talking about secular Zionists, and the stories of the Bible, of Tanakh, related much more to them because they were much more connected to the stories of Tanakh are much more connected to the centrality of Eretz Yisrael, which is what Zionism is all about. The Zionists preferred King David, David HaMelech, to Rabbi Akiva. Ben-Gurion himself, the first prime minister of the state of Israel, he felt strongly about the importance of Tanakh study without Midrash, without Rashi. He writes in Iyunim Batanach, he writes, Rashi's interpretation to the Bible is very important, but it's Rashi's interpretation alone. The Bible shines in its own light, and this light should be exposed to the eyes of the young generation. This is the task for educators, teachers, writers, scholars, poets, and artists, to envelop our people, the land of Israel and the diaspora, with the dazzling light of the Book of Books in a manner that our redeemed generation can see it. The truth is that the Rav Kook himself also stressed the greater primacy of Tanakh study with the return to Eretz Yisrael because we are living in a different era, merging the ideals of Bais Rishon, a type of nationhood, prophecy, intuition, spirit of the law, with the ideals of Bais Sheni, learning, halacha, Mishnah, and Talmud. However, secular Zionists are upending textual authority. They are saying that the Bible, Tanakh, is our most central formative text, not the Talmud. The beauty of the framework of Moshe Halbertal, how he explains this idea of Jewish people being the people of the book, is that it answers Mark Twain's question, what is the secret of Jewish immortality? One secret of Jewish immortality is certainly the way we view our sacred texts, how we canonize them, how we interpret them, and how we manage to create and sustain a shared community through shared canonized texts as both a source of halacha and as a vehicle for study and reflection in a very meaningful way. And this is the reason for our success. It's halacha and it's Jewish education. Since modern times, many non-Orthodox Jewish movements have tried to find alternative methods and values to create and shape Jewish community, Jewish identity, and Jewish belonging. And many of them have struggled to sustain these communities. Moshe Habertal has articulated what works. We are the people of the book. And the more that we are committed to these books as the source of halacha and as a vehicle for study and reflection in our everyday life, the more we will feel connected to God, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to the Jewish community.